New drugs mean that for millions of people around the world, cancer is no longer a death sentence. But good medical news often comes at a catastrophic financial cost. Now, two economists think they found a radical new way to finance the war on cancer. Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of interviews with economists around the world. My name is Tim Phillips, and today I'm talking to Ralph Coyen of the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business. With his co-author Stein van Nieuwburg of Columbia University's Graduate School of Business, he's come up with an ingenious idea to pay for innovative cancer therapies, one that he describes as a rare example in economics of a free lunch. Their Center for Economic Policy Research paper is called Financing the War on Cancer, and Ralph is here to explain the idea behind it. Ralph, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim. Thanks for having us.
The research was inspired by the development of immunotherapy drugs for cancer. What are these and what impact have they had on the fight against cancer?
Well, immunotherapy refers to a set of treatments that stimulate the body's immune system to attack cancer cells. The body's immune system does not always recognize the cancer cells or provides a defense that is not sufficiently strong. Immunotherapy helps the immune system to better recognize the cancer cells and to attack them more aggressively. Unlike traditional chemotherapies and radiation, immunotherapy treatments are fairly well tolerated, do not damage the healthy cells, and can be repeated, all of which results in a more durable response. But immunotherapies are fairly new, and most treatments have been approved by the FDA only during the last 5 years. This implies that studies that evaluate the long-term patient outcomes are limited, although the initial evidence from existing clinical studies is encouraging. For instance, for patients with late-stage melanoma, the survival rate after 18 months is below 20% with existing therapies, while it is around 70% with immunotherapy.
But these are new drugs. It sounds like they're expensive. Who's paying for them?
Unfortunately, you're right. These treatments don't come cheaply. For instance, the combination of Yervoy and Opdivo used in the treatment of melanoma costs $160,000 for a standard 12-week course. We estimate that the average cost of treatment across 17 different cancer sites to be around $50,000. Now, who pays for this? In the United States, these costs are shared between health insurers and the patient in the form of health insurance premiums and co-pays. Just as a point of reference, for a family of four with two children with an income of $65,000 a year, these costs amount to $20,000 or 31% of pre-tax income.
As we live longer, more of us are going to get cancer at some point in our lives. So is this financial model sustainable in the long term?
Well, that's an important question, and there's an ongoing discussion to what extent the current model is indeed sustainable. There's some evidence that's showing that people that get diagnosed with cancer, that the probability of default increases and the foreclosure rate on their houses increases as well, in part because of incomplete coverage. Now, various solutions have been suggested, and one solution that has been discussed is to start a credit market in which households can borrow to finance immunotherapies. Similar to a mortgage market in which the house is used as collateral, in these quote-unquote life loans, your human capital is used as collateral. Now, the challenge that you have in these markets is that households cannot pledge their future income, and the higher earnings uncertainty that you have after treatment further reduces the borrowing capacity. Now, another part of the sustainability is that if governments are paying for these treatments, then the increasingly dire fiscal position of governments in many countries make it challenging to afford some of these treatments. And so as the number of cases grows, so does the strain on what the government can actually afford. And so what we see in the data is that there's a negative relationship across countries in the level of government debt, the income per capita, and the number of new immunotherapies that are offered to their citizens. And so this suggests that patients in countries with limited debt capacity may not have access to the best cancer treatments.
Isn't the obvious solution to this to force the pharma companies to sell their cancer drugs for lower prices?
Well, the question of optimal drug pricing is a subtle one. So on one hand, one may argue that you need to restrict drug prices to improve affordability. However, pharma companies will account for this when making their R&D decisions, and it lowers their incentives to develop these new treatments in the first place. So this is not to say that current prices are right or optimal by some metric, but this issue is not the focus of our current paper. What is uncontroversial, though, is that our idea would grow demand for drugs to treat cancer and would strengthen the incentive for pharma companies to undertake additional R&D into cancer drugs.
So let's have a look at this paper you've written. When health economists look at costs and benefits of new treatments, you usually talk about the cost benefit for governments or health insurance companies. Instead, in this paper, you are looking at the impact on life insurance companies. So why involve them?
Indeed, in discussing affordability, the debate usually evolves around health insurers, governments, and pharma companies, but not life insurers. However, any medical treatment that significantly improves survival rates generates a windfall for life insurers for two reasons. First, if households live longer, then life insurers only have to pay the death benefit at a later date. Second, as most life insurers is paid via an annual premium, the insurer collects more premium income. Now, importantly, ownership rates of life insurers are high across the income distribution. The ownership rate is 74% for men and 73% for women if their income is between $50,000 and $75,000. The average death benefit of their policy is $170,000 for men and $199,000 for women. Now, to put these numbers into perspective and to see why they're relevant, consider an individual that's age 40 who is diagnosed with stage 4 melanoma who purchased life insurance at age 30. For each dollar of death benefit, the policy to the insurance company now has a value of minus 95 cents because it's likely that the patient will die. If immunotherapy is successful in just half of the cases, which is a plausible estimate, then the expected gain in survival raises the value of the contract from minus 95 cents to minus 51 cents. That's a windfall of 44% of the death benefit for the life insurer. Now, recall that the copay and health insurance costs are $20,000. So that means that a policy with a face value of only $46,000 would be enough to generate a value to the life insurer that is sufficient to cover the patient's costs of immunotherapy drugs.
This is a big windfall, isn't it? If we add this all up, what is the total potential benefit to life insurers?
So we're using data from clinical studies to estimate the improvement in survival across 17 different cancer sites. And we use a simple life insurance valuation model combined with the incidence rates of various cancers to get an overall estimate of the benefit to life insurers. We estimate that the aggregate annual benefit is around $6.8 billion, which is large compared to the total cost of $10.1 billion of immunotherapy drugs and the total copay of $4.1 billion. Another way to highlight the magnitude and the significance of the $6.8 billion is to compare it to life insurers' total net income, which equaled $39 billion in 2017. Even with the limited data and the short sample that we have, it suggests that these estimates are large and the benefits to life insurance companies are very substantial.
So what we're saying is that if life insurance companies give up some of this benefit, it would help finance cancer treatments. But why would they give up this windfall? How can we make it so that both patients and insurers benefit?
Yes, indeed. So for the policies that are sold in the past, the benefits accrue to the life insurer. And how this windfall is shared between patients and the life insurer depends on the bargaining power of the patients versus the life insurance company. The life insurer may pay part of the copay if patients otherwise would not be able to afford the treatment, and this could be means tested. In addition, there may be reputational benefits to the life insurer that may induce them to contribute. Now, even if life insurers don't want to directly contribute to the payment of these drugs, then it could still be the case that life insurance companies may allow patients to borrow against the collateral that patients have tied up in life insurance companies via the contracts that they have purchased in the past, and that would allow them to finance immunotherapy. And so that would facilitate the credit markets that are otherwise potentially hard to start.
What you're saying seems to blur the boundary between health insurance and life insurance, which have traditionally been two entirely different things.
Yes, you're right. So at this point, if you buy life insurance, then you only interact with your life insurance company at the moment that you purchase the policy and at the moment where you die. And so there's a question whether the current separation between health and life insurance companies is optimal and whether the current boundaries between the two markets need to be redrawn. In particular, a combined health and life insurance company would internalize the benefits of immunotherapy and would set lower copays and would lower the price of life insurance, knowing that consumers would have access to these breakthrough treatments. And so indeed, there is a question about whether the traditional lines between health and life insurance companies need to be redrawn.
You've used US data on this, and it seems to be particularly relevant in the United States. But does this also apply to other healthcare systems where the government takes a larger part?
Yes, indeed. So our insights do apply to other countries as well. So outside of the US, governments do play a more important role. But what we show in the paper that there's a strong correlation between per capita income of different countries and the number of new treatments that have been adopted in the last couple of years. And so while this may be for various reasons, such as like fiscal constraints or difference in bureaucracy to approve new drugs, life insurers in these countries may have an incentive to provide access to these new treatments going beyond the government, either by contributing to the cost directly or by offering these credit solutions that I mentioned. But the other thing that's useful to mention is that our insights don't just apply to immunotherapy. So any other life-extending medical innovations beyond immunotherapy also would have a similar impact. Now, it turns out that the market that is closest to what we have in mind is in Asia, where insurers already offer certain type of health benefits as part of life insurance contracts.
Have you had any reaction from policymakers or insurers or even doctors to say, what a great idea, Ralph, or is it still a thought experiment at the moment?
So we have had some preliminary conversations with doctors, consultants, and life insurers, and there seems to be enthusiasm to explore our idea in practice, and in particular, potentially starting in the Asian market where this is closest to what we have in mind. However, the paper is very recent, so it's too soon to tell whether the market will ultimately adopt it.
Thank you, Ralph Goyen.
Well, thank you very much, Tim.
A reminder that the paper is called Financing the War on Cancer. It's CEPR discussion paper 12990, and I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about this idea. This has been a Vox Talk presented by the Centre for Economic Policy Research. For more in the series, visit voxeu.org/vox-talks.